Even if I would have seen the previews for this in a movie theater, I would have been like, yep, skip that one.
Should have been the thing, or should have been Cthulhu.
A piece of paper being blown by a vacuum.
Eldritch horror, vampire sort of scenario.
We've both been in 100-mile-an-hour winds at times.
To break his heart, that it wasn't even heard in shower.
Hello, and welcome to Movie Smash!
Hello and welcome to Movie Smash, the show where we dive headfirst into comic book movies outside the MCU. If you're new to the show, thanks for joining us. If you've been here before, you know the drill. Each episode, we're going to smash through a movie whose source materials from a graphic novel or a comic. Is it worth revisiting? Should it be forgotten? Let's find out. This is Movie Smash. I'm one of your hosts, Chris Roberts. I'm the founder of Off Panel Creations. With me today, I have Jeremy Parmentier.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Parmentier, also of the Retrovaniacs podcast, and I was very disappointed to find out this is not about liquid paper.
No, it is not about liquid paper. And Fergal is not with us this week, so if you're a Fergal fan or a Fergal stan, don't worry, he'll be back shortly. Our movie today is 2007's Whiteout, starring Kate Beckinsale, Gabriel Macht, and Tom Skerritt, directed by Dominic Cena.
It is the most isolated landmass on the planet. There is no permanent population. There is no horizon. No shadows. There is only white. Nature never intended for you to survive here. But this here, nature, is not the only thing to fear.
We have a real situation developing.
What happened out there?
We were out looking for meteor samples. And then the radar went off the charts. We hit something big.
How familiar were you with the movie, with the graphic novel of Whiteout?
I did not know this at all, but because we were covering this, and it was just a four-issue, you know, series, I thought, okay, I'm going to read this right before I watch it. So I did, and I was familiar with the novel when I watched the movie. But up until we did this episode, I had never even heard of it.
Yeah, me personally, I've never read the comic. I didn't even know it was a comic until we picked this movie. And I tried looking for it, really not that hard looking for it, but I couldn't really find it anywhere. It sounds like neither you or myself had seen this movie before our recording today.
No, I'm not surprised that I hadn't seen this. This looks, without you having it on the list of like, here are some things we should cover because they're, you know, based on comic books and graphic novels, I would have just thought this was any other like thriller movie. So I wouldn't have been that pressed on it. Not even like a horror movie, like a straight, you know, mystery kind of thing. So this is not the normal kind of thing I watch. Although there are elements of this I really do like in general. So, you know, once I started watching it, I was like, okay, this might be all right when I started reading it. But I had not, even if I would have seen the previews for this in a movie theater, I would have been like, yep, skip that one.
Yeah, I had not seen this movie at all before we started taping it. When we picked it, I went out and saw the trailer. And even after seeing the trailer, my expectations around this movie were not what I actually saw at the end of the day. So I probably would not have seen this movie in theaters when it first came out if I had known about it. So, Jeremy, you mentioned you're going to do our comic book history for us. Give us a little bit of background.
So sure, this was a 1998 four-issue series written by Mark Rucka, illustrated by Steve Lieber, and published by Oni Press. It was actually the first thing written by Mark Rucka in the comic book world, I guess. It was a story of Kerry Stutko, who's a U.S. Marshal stationed in Antarctica, who's investigating a mysterious murder. A body's found, has no face visible. Like it has a face, but it's destroyed, and some weird indentations in the ground. So she's trying to figure out, you know, who this was, what happened to them, if this was a murder. She has to try to solve it. And that involves her going to different research bases all around Antarctica trying to solve this while there's a horrible Arctic storm, the titular whiteout, that makes traveling between these areas very difficult, which does roll into the story at some point. But it's basically a murder mystery in comic book form.
Yeah, the trailer to this movie did not spell that out at all. Before we move on, just a quick spoiler warning. If this is your first time joining us, just a heads up. We're going to be discussing the plot of this movie and may discuss certain elements of the story that might be considered spoilers, so consider yourself warned. Let's change gears, talk about the movie itself. What's the plot of the movie, and does it vary greatly from the source material itself?
Now, this is going to shock you. It is very similar to the story that was just given for the source material. This is the story of Kerry Stutko, a U.S. Marshal stationed in Antarctica, tasked with solving a murder. A mysterious body has been found. And so during this investigation, she has to travel between several research stations that are managed by different nations across the world, and she must quickly solve this because the difference this time is the storm itself, the titular whiteout, is actually much, much larger. It looks almost like a hurricane over most of the continent. And so they are actually evacuating all of the stations. So she has to try to solve this murder before anyone who could be a suspect is taken off the continent.
So this movie, as you've said a couple times, is a thriller. It's a murder mystery. This isn't your standard sort of comic book superhero supernatural storyline. So really, thrillers are mainly based around their characters. Let's spend a little time with those characters. You've mentioned Carrie Sutko a couple times. She is played by Kate Beckinsale. What were your initial thoughts comparing the movie version to the comic version?
Well, let's start with your impression of her, since you didn't read the comic, because I read the book and then back-to-back watched the movie, I didn't necessarily like the casting for this character. However, I don't know if I would feel that way if I hadn't read it. So what did you think of Kate Beckinsale as Carrie Stick?
Let's first start off. Kate Beckinsale, I like her as an actress. She's a good sort of mid-tier actress for me. Like, she did all the Underworld movies. I even liked her in that Serendipity movie for a rom-com. Her being in this movie, I've got nothing wrong. No problem with her being in it. She can do action when it's necessary. She can also do sort of love interest if she has to do it. She's got a good range in that. But that being said, because I have that preconceived notion of what Kate Beckinsale normally does, being the Underworld movies or the Van Helsing movies, she does a lot of vampire movies. I honestly went into this movie thinking it was some sort of eldritch horror vampire sort of scenario. So I was quite disappointed when I realized she's just a cop.
She is just a cop. And unfortunately, in the graphic novel version, the character of Carrie Stetko is not a movie star, right? She's not an action hero. She's kind of out of shape. She is not incredibly attractive. It's not a main piece of the character, but it's kind of just she's an every person, right? She is the average person that is stationed in Antarctica. There are action moments in the graphic novel, but it's more of a survival kind of action scene. It's not that she ever, like, you know, becomes this incredible fighter. And I don't think that necessarily happens with this character either. But having that background with Kate Beckinsale, you might be like, oh, yeah, there's going to be some crazy action scenes. And there are some, but it's not. After reading the book, it's just a different type of person. I don't know who would be a good fit necessarily. I'm sure if I would have put some more time into that question before I just asked it out loud now, I'd probably have some good answers. But she's just the average every person who's not necessarily super attractive or super built. She's just apparently good at being a U.S. Marshal.
Yeah, I imagine at this point in Kate's career, she was probably looking to sort of break out from that vampire mold that she'd been stuck in for a while. Playing a thriller, you know, U.S. Marshal may have been a choice for her. But yeah, I imagine she was really cast just because she has some star appeal to her at that point and she can do action. But she is definitely not your average person.
Yeah, no. I mean, if you're trying to cast someone who looks like they could be your neighbor, your neighbor's not Kate Beckinsale. Most likely, if you live next to Kate Beckinsale, I apologize.
Now, the other character was the Dr. John Fury, played by Tom. For me, he felt very much like the old grandpa.
Yes, and that is accurate. In the source material, he's also that same kind of character, very much a mentor. I thought that was a great casting. Tom Skerritt is great in everything, and it was good to see him in this. So, yeah, I had no problem with Tom Skerritt in this role, and I also think that the character does tie close enough to the source material that, you know, it does meet that need. You're supposed to feel like he is the old grandfather, the mentor, the old friend of Carrie who's looking out for her on the side. Like, that's what you're supposed to think of Dr. John.
Now, the other character, Robert Price, he's the third main character in this movie. Now, originally, wasn't he supposed to be female in the source material?
He is, and they've kind of mashed together a couple different characters. The pilot that also kind of helps her out, Delphi, that's you mentioned, that will be mentioned in a moment. I mean, also is kind of mashed together from other characters. So they simplified this somewhat from the number of characters in the graphic novel. I don't know quite why they changed the character that is Robert Price into a male over a female, because they essentially serve the same role. I think the difference here is that Robert Price really, like, the character, the way that he's portrayed here, really is that kind of gray area. Is he good or bad? Is he really the actual bad guy? You're not really sure. You're not even quite positive, you know, who he really is with. It's very mysterious. And the female character from the comics has the same role, but for her, it seems more like it's very clear she's working for, you know, another country because she's from one of the other stations in Antarctica. So she's clearly, like, kind of a double agent, but not really, where he kind of shows up and you're not sure who he's with. Is he really trying to cover his own tracks? What's going on? So I think he's actually, for the movie, I think he's a better fit than the other character. But I think the other character kind of was more dimensional than this kind of, this guy kind of he served that one role and that was it. He helps her out a little bit, but really he's there and you're kind of questioning the whole time, should I trust this guy?
Yeah, he's supposed to be the red herring of the movie, where we're not sure if he's actually the bad guy or not for it. And we're unsure, you know, can he be trusted? To be honest with you, the portrayal of him, it was kind of flat to me, and it was sort of painfully obvious that he was the actual red herring, because he kind of does show up out of nowhere, but he's not mysterious enough where I'm like, no, who is this guy? Is this guy going to betray her in the end? Because that would have felt too obvious.
It would have been too obvious, and I think they weren't good at if they were trying to make him the red herring, it wasn't done clear enough where it wasn't obviously either like, oh yeah, he's supposed to be bad with a wink, right? So it was okay. I think, again, this is the kind of character that you need a little more time with to flesh out so that you can get that kind of gray area that didn't really exist here, instead of basically just telling you nothing about somebody and they just show up out of nowhere with more knowledge than they should have, which is kind of the function they hold.
I was actually reading some interviews about this, and they're discussing why they made that change of making it from Robert Price's character being male versus female. And it's because the studio execs had felt that America would not want to watch a movie with two female leads, which I think is a little strange because of just the material of this.
It is strange, and because of other material that I was thinking about when I watched this, that one of them was very much female-led. I was kind of surprised to hear that. But, I mean, I am going to second guess what a studio thought, but I'm not surprised when that's a studio response. Oh, no, we can't just have two women. You have to have a guy.
Yeah, especially considering when this movie came out back in 2007, that era. If Robert Price was a female, I don't think it would have changed the story at all.
No, it doesn't. And in fact, in the comic version, kind of the same function is there. It's not quite, again, as am I bad wink, but it still has the same function. And yes, there was no real reason to change it other than arguably star power, but I don't know what this person was ever in other than this movie. And because, again, somebody thought, no, we can't just have two women run this. We have to have a mix for everybody. Make this an everyone movie.
Now, then we had Delphi as he was a helicopter pilot. Oh, sorry, the plane pilot.
Plane pilot.
And his role to me felt really he was meant to be, I wouldn't say the sidekick of the story, but really to give us a sense there could be stakes, because of course Kate's not going to die in the first act of the movie. So it gives us a person that can go along for the ride who could potentially be killed off. But what was your thoughts around Delphi?
Delphi is another character that's kind of amalgamated from people in the source material. The pilot that actually does kind of take her around the version of this ends up kind of being a connection to other people. And the female lead that we just talked about that was replaced in this movie starts way earlier in the story. In this case, they have Robert Price show up kind of late in this, right before they find kind of some major clues that point in what might have actually happened, where in the source material, the female version of that is in very early. You kind of see her third person. You see what she's doing when she hears that this marshal's coming. And it almost is like, does she know more than she's saying? Because she's really trying to make sure she's very aware of where this marshal is going, what she's doing. So she's accompanying her the whole time through most of the story, where Delphi's kind of doing it the first half. And then that role is kind of supplanted by Robert Price, even though Delphi does follow her through most of the.
And I think really when it comes to the cast, that's the majority of the people in the movie. There are some smaller parts, obviously, throughout, but I think it speaks to the isolation that they're trying to sort of highlight the fact that this is on an Antarctica research base.
It does. And that's kind of a problem because even in the source material, there's a group of seven or eight people that they think could be suspects that are all kind of tied to this. When they find the body and figure out who they think it is, there's eight people that could be connected to them they want to interview and talk to and whatever. And so in comic form, you have, they have like a page that literally shows you all eight of these people as if they're on a cork board or something. And you can see their face and their name and know who they are. They have to do the same thing in this movie where they're going through and trying to find people to interview them. But instead, it's 100 nameless people that you don't know. So there's all these people in like a party at the main station that Carrie starts in that are just kind of partying down because I guess it's the end of the season for scientists or something. But there's all these people that are probably very important to the story to know, have I interviewed them? Are they connected to this body? Are they possibly aware of who might know this person? But none of that's very clear because they really focus on those four characters and everyone else is just there for a moment.
I think you're right about this one. Besides the main four characters, everybody else that's on the base is really there just sort of the background. In fact, and most of them leave by the end. And the only ones that do talk are really talking about how this impending storm is coming, which actually makes it kind of obvious who the villain is just by sheer process of elimination. Now, why don't we change gears and talk about the plot a little bit? Now, this movie opens up with a Russian aircraft flying across Antarctic airspace, and it's probably during the Soviet era, and then a fight breaks out on board, which causes this plane to crash onto the continent. Now, is this scene actually in the book?
There is no such scene in the book. The book starts literally with you're introduced to Carrie, and then immediately they call her in because there's a body been found, and then it starts the mystery and the exploration. There is no foreshadowing in the comic to say, here's what might be happening. You have no idea, except that it's in Antarctica. This movie starts with very clearly some scene of a Russian aircraft where, they have some sort of mysterious cargo and they start a fight for whatever reason. Maybe it's espionage, maybe it's whatever, but it ends up causing a crash that wasn't planned. The fight goes poorly, they kill the pilot by accident, ends up crashing the plane, and then it cuts from there to the 30 years in the future, and that's where the story starts. I didn't like that scene because it from the get-go lets you know more than, like, you didn't know kind of what was happening in the comic until maybe 3 issues out of the 4 were in, and even then you're kind of just hinted at it. This tells you from the get-go, hey, there's something on this plane, it's crashing in Antarctica, and now there's a murder. Now, if I didn't read the source material, that might lead me to believe this is more than just a thriller, but in fact some sort of The Thing-style horror movie. Did you have that suspicion when you watched it?
Yeah, and that's one of my problems with this movie. Like, I went into this thing actually thinking that this was like a Cliffs of Madness kind of scenario. There's going to be eldritch horror, or there is a creature on board this, or there is a killer virus that's turning people into things. Like, I honestly, from the trailer, it just looks like an action movie. And they say, you know, there's a lot of unknown, and there's a mystery, and it looks like there's some big battles that are happening in the whiteout storm. So I actually thought, oh, this is just setting up why there's this thing in Antarctica, or this thing crashes and releases the Kraken. But yeah, so having seen the movie, looking back at that scene, what it tells me is they didn't want to lean on the mystery of the murder itself, but really the mystery of what was in the cargo that caused this mystery to happen. Like, they almost thought that the mystery of the murder was so weak, they had to add this extra mystery to it.
And I think, again, if you're trying to get people's attention, if you're trying to grab people who might think they want to see a more action-based film or than what this actual story is, sure, you need to add something into it. And from the aspect of, if I hadn't read this, would I have been expecting something, I don't want to say more, but a totally different answer than what the actual answer was because of that opening? Okay, that's fine as a misdirect, but there's a lot of misdirect in this movie, and I think that's one that doesn't need to be there. They could have easily done even just like some photos or some short flashback to explain this later on to keep that mystery going. But it's fine. So you know from the get-go that there's clearly some reason they showed you that aircraft. They showed you that there was strange cargo, and they showed you there was a crash in the Antarctic. Well, okay, now there's a murder. What could be happening? Is it something supernatural? Is it something else? So I don't mind it, but it does clearly tell you from the get-go this is not just a murder, where the comic still has kind of the first issue is trying to determine, is this just a weird murder or is this something larger? And if it is a murder, why?
You sort of mentioned this is not really a flashback. This is just the beginning of the story. But they did have flashbacks in this movie. Did the comic have flashbacks in it?
Yes. And I do want to talk about those flashbacks. So the flashback scenes are just specifically explaining why Carrie, a U.S. Marshal, is in the Antarctic. It's not that she loves the Antarctic. She was stationed there because she's essentially being shunned. In the comic and in the movie, basically, she has killed somebody she was supposed to be watching. But it's slightly different because in the comic book, and again, this is going to give stuff away, so I guess if you want to rush out and read or see Whiteout, maybe pause this, do that, and come back. In the comic book, she's, you know, on witness protection, but she's guarding a prisoner who manages to kill one of the other officers that is guarding him when she's, like, taking a nap or whatever. And she wakes up, and this guy is trying to sexually assault her, so she, you know, basically kills him. You know, she stops him first, and then she takes that extra step farther where he's like, okay, you got me. You can lock me back up again. She's like, no, and then she, like, snaps his neck. She kills him in a very brutal manner because she's so offended that this happened to her, right? In this movie, they change those flashbacks. It's the same scenario, except instead it looks like it's a dirty cop that let the criminal go, and then she kills the dirty cop as well. Like, I didn't know why they made that change, because I thought just in general having the criminal be as gross as he was in the comic, and then, you know, her response being maybe that she is kind of a loose cannon or is unpredictable, fine. But instead they kind of made it, I don't know, they added that extra layer which didn't need to be there, because, again, it wasn't a misdirect. It's not like you're going to think, okay, there's clearly other people coming back for her from that instance. It was just unnecessary to have that extra detail changed. But again, I don't know if it would have bothered me had I not read this source material.
When I was watching it, it's kind of funny because it's a stark contrast for the Antarctica scenes and her flashbacks. Her flashbacks take place in some sort of sunny place. It might be, looks like Miami or wherever, but I think it's supposed to be Hawaii. Is that correct?
I don't remember exactly where it is because they don't show you the outside. They literally show the hotel room they're in. That's the only thing in the flashbacks for those. But it was definitely not Antarctica. I mean, she was sent to Antarctica because basically they determined that she didn't murder somebody in cold blood, but we're not going to trust you with these other things. You're going to go somewhere where you can't do any damage. And we need someone there anyway. So, hey, guess what? Welcome to Antarctica.
Well, the reason I bring that up is just because this was one of those little trivia facts for it. The U.S. Marshal Service actually does have legal presence in Antarctica, but it's after 1989. And it's actually under the U.S. Attorney for Hawaii. So it made me kind of think, like, oh, they actually maybe did a little bit of homework and think she worked in Hawaii.
That's possible. I mean, again, it's not a poorly written source material. It's just not necessarily something I think would have been screaming to be made into a film.
Now, one thing I do want to talk about, too, is obviously the movie is called Whiteout. So there's this massive storm that's supposed to be hitting the entire continent. That is, as he put it, it's like a culmination of like a hurricane and snow and winds of 100 miles per hour and all this stuff. Normally when the storm is in the name of the movie, such as like Twister or Twisters, how do you feel about the presence of the storm itself in the story?
So in the story and even in the movie, I think the purpose of it is so that when they're outside at all, there's a constant danger. It's not just, oh, am I worried that a murderer is coming after me, which sometimes that could be the case. But it's also just in general, being out in the elements, even in the best gear they have, this is the kind of storm that if you're not fully prepared and ready to go, you're going to get frostbite. You're going to get lost forever. You're going to, you know, fall into a hole or something crazy because you can't see. It's a whiteout, meaning that the snow is so heavy you can't see more than like a foot in front of you. So I think it's done to a good effect in the movie, especially when she's trying to run from somebody or make sure she can get between these buildings in the middle of the storm because she has to stay, you know, probably arguably way too late during this whiteout storm to try to solve this mystery. What I thought was a little goofy in the movie version is the wind is so strong that it literally blows people away. And I mean, we've lived through hurricanes. We've both been in 100 mile an hour winds at times. Yes, you don't want to be standing in them, but it doesn't blow you down the street as a human being. It's just not a thing. Things hit you. Bad things occur. You don't want to be standing in it, but it's not strong enough to knock you like as if you were a piece of paper being blown by a vacuum, right? It's not that strong. That's how strong the wind is in this movie. And I think, I don't know. For that was the part I was like, that's ridiculous. Especially because for the most part, they're also doing all the things you would do in a situation like this. They're clipped into lines. They're made sure that they are, attached to something that's not going to go anywhere. So worst case scenario, they can hold on to it till the storm dies down for a moment. And instead, there's people just getting blown around like that. It's pretty, I don't know. I like the idea of the whiteout. I thought the wind was a bit much.
As I said, I saw the trailer for this movie before we watched it. And there's part of the trailer showing that strong storm, like ripping people away. And it just seems intense. And that's led more to my belief. Wow, it's an elder god that they have woken up. That's a pretty strong storm. They're not like on a foreign planet or something to be able to have winds strong enough to just whip people across the ice. So yet again, that also led to me believing that there is a supernatural sort of underbelly to this movie, which of course there is not. Let me be clear. There is no supernatural part of this movie. There's no H.P. Lovecraft, Cthulhu in the background. There are no zombies. There are no vampires. But those are part of the elements I saw in the trailer that made me believe this. Like I said, it was my own biasness, the fact that I had my own thoughts around Kate Beckinsale and what kind of a movie she did during that time period. And what I was seeing in the trailer led me to that, which I guess is why she's trying to get away from those kind of roles, because she's kind of typecast at this point.
Well, it's not just that. When you see this setting, you think of immediately The Thing, right? That's the kind of movie I expect here. It's guys in an old lab. Things occur and all of a sudden, you know, people are missing and vanishing. Now, The Thing is very clearly a horror movie. There's no question. Once the movie starts, it in fact is a horror movie and not a murder mystery. But even I don't know if you like the show True Detective that's on HBO, but the last season of True Detective, which arguably was really a True Detective or just a renamed show, is also based in it's North Alaska. But it's the same idea. It's this overfrozen area. It's out in the middle of nowhere. These are people that work in like science labs and this tiny town that supports it. And that's a really good version of what I think this tries to do, which is it is a regular murder mystery. It adds a lot of interesting characters you're supposed to go through. There are these red herring characters. There are some characters that clearly know more than they're saying, but they're not sure why. But it does have this supernatural undercurrent without becoming The Thing, right? It never takes the full jump into horror. It's just this supernatural sort of feel that, again, even reading the book, I wasn't sure until the end that it wasn't going that route. But the book doesn't give you any signs that it is that, except the expectation of, okay, this is a comic book. I've seen things in this format before. I wonder if it's going to go that route. I think the planes thing at the start of this really does line up for you think there's going to be something else here that's not.
Yeah, me going blind to these movies was not helping me for this case. In fact, there's the scene where they find the Russian plane under the ice and they're exploring it. I was going, like, this is where the jump scare is going to occur. This is where they're going to find a smaller version of the big bad that they're going to be encountering.
That whole arc is different in the comics. The end result is the same, right? The end, the beats of the movie do follow the beats of the comic, I think, that matter for the story to progress. But that whole Russian plane and the fact that there's cargo on it, and that's what seems to be tied to this murder mystery, wasn't in there. So I was I like that because I do like any movie that has that kind of hidden things under the ice, or you know, you find these old bunkers or whatever like that. That's fine. And again, it does add some, I don't want to say horror elements, but suspense elements maybe, because you're still not quite sure what it's going to be. That said, once you get there and it does explain what they assume is happening, which is also another red herring, by the way, it's another like it. Yes, it is tied to what's happening, but the actual items that were in that cargo are misstated on purpose, I think, so that you're not quite sure what's going on. But I didn't mind that. It was okay. But I do think that's where the movie pace changes completely. I think the movie is fairly slow up to that point, and then it goes 100 miles an hour until it's over.
I know Fergal's not with us today, and there's a scene I want to bring up, because if Fergal had been here, he would be remiss if we didn't bring it up. Do you feel the shower scene was necessary?
No. I mean, it was fine. It's not like it was offensive, but it doesn't need to be there. But I'm sure Fergal would have been like, that is the best scene in the movie.
Probably. And to break his heart, that it wasn't even her in the shower. That was a body double. So the one last scene I do want to talk about is going to be the sort of the big reveal scene at the end of the movie, where sort of all the pieces come together. Do you feel it was earned, and do you feel it was satisfying how the whole thing played at the end?
So I do like the ending. I think you're right, because of the limited amount of cast, unless there was some supernatural thing, which is not what happens, or there was some kind of crazy tie to a crew member of that Russian plane at the beginning, which is why they showed it to you. There are only a handful of people that would make any sense to be the killer, unless it really is like, oh no, there's just a crazy person. Like, that doesn't make any sense in Antarctica at these labs. There would just be a random crazy person. I think that there's not enough going on in this movie to make it so it's not fairly obvious that somebody that you may not suspect is ultimately, you know, kind of a main point in this plot. I don't mind the rest, though. Like, I like the ending. And in fact, the actual ending of what happens to this individual is slightly different in the comic. They just straight up arrest him. That's it. They arrest him, and the movie goes on, or the rest of the comic is them waiting for the season to come back around so they can leave this while they sit locked, you know, with this person locked up in a cell with them and one other person for like 6 months. So it's a little more bleak. The entire graphic novel is a little more bleak, but at least, like, again, I like how this ends, though, where it's more of the, well, you know what? It's terrible outside. He probably won't survive. And there he goes. And that's it. And you don't know what happened. And it's okay not to know.
Yeah. And then he just gives up, essentially, because the way he's revealed is that Carrie loses two of her fingers due to frostbite. And I understand in the movie it was a couple other fingers, but she still loses fingers. And then she sees that the doctor uses a special loop on how he sutures up stitches. And she's the same thing as on the body. And that's how she discovers the whole thing out. The question is, does that feel like a too big of a leap in logic? Because of the fact that there's nobody really else there, it's got to be him.
Yeah, it's a big logic leap. The problem I would have had, I guess, is that since I already knew where it was going, I was kind of happy to see it still went there without having to worry about, did it make sense that it could, right? I was hoping they didn't change the ending to something that was like, because for a while, even though that the Russian character is a red herring we talked about, there was still a chance they were going to go with that as the end in my mind. So I was like, God, I hope that's not it. I really don't want that to be the answer. Or have it be somebody else we saw for 1 minute before and they decided to change it. Instead, it's the same ending as the source material. So the logic part for me at that point, I was more concerned they weren't going to go that way. So I didn't have a problem following that was probably what's going to happen. But I guess that's a good point. If you didn't read it, was that too crazy of a jump?
At this point in the movie, I was like, there's nothing supernatural. It's not what I expected. So just watching it, and then you're trying to boil down, well, who could it have been? And you realize they've only introduced so many characters by the third act. So, and one of them, we have a good sense, is not the bad guy. And the other one has left. So what that means is we've got the doc. That's it. In murder mysteries, to me, it's got to be that the audience can figure it out too as we're going along. And also in the sense that it's such a weird clue. Like, I mean, granted, I'm not a doctor. I don't do sutures. But I can't imagine that people have a signature tie-off, right? Yes. Like, it's like, oh, that's like my artist's signature on a painting. It all looks the same every single time. I imagine, yes, when you tie a knot, you use the same one over and over again. But I can't imagine there's only so many ways you're going to do that.
Yeah, I think it was also that when you do learn that, they make a point earlier to show that he's not good at it. Like, oh, I'm bad at this, so this is my sloppy job. So then it shows that it's like, hey, that's a really sloppy job. Wait a second. And that's what's supposed to tie it together. It's okay. It was more in this case that it wasn't as explained as smoothly as it was in the
Well, how'd you feel about the effects for this movie? I mean, not that it's a big CGI-driven movie, but there are some effects. There's the storm itself, there are the bodies and the prosthetics used in that.
The bodies were fine. They weren't overly bad. They weren't mind-blowing, because none of the effects on the bodies were like, it wasn't body horror, right? They weren't doing crazy things. They were just bad wounds. And in the case of the body, it has a face that's torn off, but they don't give you a super close view of it. It's always enough so you can see what happened, but you're not digging into the details there. The storm is really the impressive, if you're going to say there's an impressive aspect of this. The storm does look like it does block vision after so far. Things fade out very easily. It's very hard to tell what's going on there. It makes it very chaotic, but in a way that works. It's not like, you know, shaky cam where you can't tell what's going on at the time. It does a very good job at kind of making the storm feel like it is as threatening as it's supposed to be. Again, except for the wind that was a little over the top. Everything else on it was done very well. It's hard to see. It's hard to be able to focus on what you're doing. The weather part, like when she does lose her finger, it's because she has to take her glove off at one point and then gets stuck outside somehow and then has to open this big vault thing to get into another building, a weather vault. And because it's metal, her hand freezes to the metal, and she has to literally like rip the skin off her hand to get that. And then because she doesn't get back to safety fast enough, they get super cold and she gets frostbite on them and they go gangrene. She has to get them cut off. So like that does happen in the comic. That does happen here. And it does also make, again, just the actual storm feel like it's probably more dangerous than anything else you're dealing with while you're trying to solve this murder and get away from what could be murderers coming after you.
Now, how'd you feel about, this one stuck to me, but how'd you feel about the Russian plane at the beginning? You know, it wasn't from the comic, so it was added. What were your thoughts when you saw that CGI?
It was also the start of the movie, so I had no preconceived notion of how good a quality movie this would be, so it didn't bother me. I'm going to be quite honest. Like, if there would have been the rest of it and they would have shown it later when it looked really bad, perhaps I would have laughed a little more at it. But instead, I was more of like, what is this and why am I seeing this? Am I watching the right movie, in fact? Because this wasn't in the book I just read. And then I was like, is this one of those situations where they literally like, yeah, well, in the comic, he's in Antarctica and she's a cop and nothing else is from this story. I was very concerned about that. So I was less worried about the effects on that plane. I think I should probably rewatch that part to see how badly it looks, but it didn't bother me at the time as much as for the effects, as much as the fact that it was there at all.
Yeah, it looks like an early 90s Command and Conquer cutscene.
Oh, yes, it does. That definitely is. The lighting and everything was definitely very Command and Conquer.
I kind of feel, and I have no evidence of this, pure speculation, that they made the movie and then they felt audiences won't understand how this plane got under the ice in the first place, so we need to add the scene at the beginning, and it was kind of like thrown on there.
And that could be true, but this is why I wasn't sure even why they had that in there. Again, unless the goal was to misdirect people into what actually is happening. But in the story, the original story, the thing that ultimately was on that plane is diamonds. It's very, very raw, uncut, huge, very clean diamonds that are worth, you know, millions of. So in the original version, it's they find in the mines that are there, because it's also not just a research facility. There's a mining facility up there. They find gold. So it's, you know, basically, you know, big bars of gold they made that they didn't tell anyone about. They're trying to sneak out of Antarctica to somehow get money for. That is what they find. It's not that they found this old buried Russian plane. It's like, oh, no, the mines that were there that were mining for, you know, magnesium or something else that they'd be mining for down there actually finds gold. They try to keep it a secret, get it in some transferable format and sneak it off the island, as opposed to having to, you know, register it with whatever country owns those stations and therefore give it to the government or whatever. No, they're going to get rich by this gold they found if they can just keep it secret. The plane wasn't necessary. If you're not going to change what they found, the plane isn't necessary. And even diamonds. I mean, don't they find diamonds in mines? Couldn't they have just said they found diamonds in those mines, as opposed to adding this whole Russian plane story that also, if the Russian plane crashed and it was 30 years prior, like, I understand Antarctica's cold and a lot of things can happen, but it was buried way under the ice. I don't know if that's realistically 30 years where there would be no sign that a crash had ever occurred there. Like, that's a crazy crash followed by something like thawing and then freezing over again, which I guess is the story. It doesn't really matter, but it just, the plane didn't need to be there. Again, unless the point is to misdirect, maybe to explain why this Russian guy's there because it was a Russian plane. I don't know, but it wasn't needed. The movie, again, unless it's just the fact that everyone's going to be like, well, you know, in 2009, no one cares about gold bars. They care about diamonds. Okay, fine. You could have still had to be a mine, though. I don't know. It was a weird shift that didn't ultimately change anything. So I don't know why they made.
Well, and the other thing, too, is you mentioned sort of the amount of buildup of snow that could have occurred for that time period. There have been scientific research stations in our Antarctica for a while. When this plane would have been flying, which is during, you know, the Soviet Union, wouldn't have somebody noticed a plane? Because it's not like the airspace is filled up with planes or traffic. Only a few planes go over Antarctica at a time. I think they would have noticed that thing going down. And two, I mean, maybe they did some research in the area. They figured out you can't get diamonds in Antarctica. There's only gold. Or maybe they found it later. You can't mine. I don't know. Who knows why they made that switch. But I felt it was a little, it feels very much like it was unnecessary. And it was done really to inform us that there's more to the mystery itself was too weak, and we had to have another added element to it. Like, was it nuclear fuel? What was under there? What was so valuable that they want to smuggle out of Antarctica?
Well, that's one of the misdirects early, is that the Russian says he thinks it might be nuclear fuel that was stored on the plane, you know, post-World War II, right? And say, oh no, now people are gonna use it for weapons development, which, again, fine. For a plot point, that's okay. But since it wasn't that, it's even more pointless why they made that shift.
Now, I know the comic books, the graphic novels, they've made sequels of this. This is, I think they made 3 or 4 at this point I was reading somewhere.
I think there's only 2 that are actually out, and there was one planned to release the same time this movie did that never came to. But yes, there were multiple stories with this character. They do take place in Antarctica. And I thought at first maybe they combined the 2 stories into this, but they didn't. This follows the original Whiteout storm.
Normally at this point, I can talk about sort of all the production ideas that have changed or what was altered during the pre-production. But to be honest with you, because this movie came into theaters and sort of disappeared really fast, it was a struggle finding this movie as well, that it didn't do well in the box office at all. The only really funny, interesting fact I could find was that Kate Beckinsale was not the original choice for this character. And that was Reese Witherspoon.
I think that makes more sense for the every character, but I think it's still the wrong fit. I think it would have still worked. I would have the same feel for it. Yeah, I guess I like Kate Beckinsale more than that.
There are things we don't like about this movie. There might be some things we like, but what do you love about this movie? Or what did you think they did right, and what could they have done better?
I love the setting of the movie. Anytime there's a movie that's based in Antarctica, especially if it's going to be on semi-abandoned scientific facilities, I'm in, because I want something like The Thing. And even if it's not The Thing, trying to figure out what it is enjoyable. That's why I really liked, once I did finally start reading the source material, I was like, I'm enjoying this. And at the end, I was happy with the ending, but I was kind of also happy it wasn't this crazy supernatural thing, even though there was a lot of gray area on what it was at first. I thought it was done very well. So I love the setting for it. I liked the storm being a part of the story. It wasn't just, you know, it gave this extra timer to the entire thing I liked. But other than that, everything else was, it wasn't even like it was terrible. It was just kind of forgettable.
I agree with you. I like things that take place in Antarctica because it's a great way in our modern age to create isolation, right? The cell phones don't work. The radio's not working because you got this massive storm coming in. You're trapped, which is not a thing that really happens in our society anymore. So it's a great setting for movies. And it's just one of those landscapes that are almost alien, but they still take place on Earth. When it comes to what they could have done better around this mystery, I'm going to ignore my initial thoughts going into it about how it should have been The Thing or should have been Cthulhu or something like that. But looking at it as a true mystery, the mystery was not exciting. It was sort of plain vanilla, not even a plain murder mystery. There weren't enough sort of clues that led me down other paths. It was just we were following along the set of breadcrumbs that took us directly to where we needed to be at the end of the day. And that was it. There was this false the timer, as you put it, right? The storm that's coming in that gave us some level of stakes, like we got to solve this that amount of time, or the storm is going to trap us here. But at the end of the day, the storm still trapped them there, and it didn't end, you know, wasn't an end-all be-all. It just, the storm came in. So I think definitely make the mystery more solid. Make it so I'm actually wondering who it might be. Introduce some other characters that might be better misdirects. Maybe have the pegboard with all the faces on it. And at the same time, make the storm feel more present. Make it more like a force of nature, as it should be. Because it was always in the background, but I never felt like this storm that has these massive winds that can fling people across the ice, like they were ever a threat of, except for those times where she was going between modules. Or where she's going between the different camps. I mean, I gotta say that one fight scene where she's attached to the rope and they're fighting in there, that was actually pretty neat. One fight scene can't save a whole plot line.
No, and I think the point of that is also to kind of seal up that isolation feeling that you're talking about, to also say not only are you in an isolated place, but now you're in an isolated place where people can't come save you. Like, there is no chance that no matter what happens, you're not going to get, you know, another officer to show up. You're not going to be able to get a radio out because the winds are so bad. Like, you're here alone with who you think might be the killer or killers that you think are chasing you. Like, I didn't mind any of that. And I think what this is missing that the comic had was that feeling of, it's not as much solving the mystery, although that was there, but it's her survival. The feeling that Carrie was constantly also being threatened. There were a lot of scenes where you know, like the fight scene, for example, or when they're going to other areas where you see, you know, the guys in the snow gear kind of attacking somebody or chasing her with an axe. Because she's not an action hero, and because a lot of the time those things would happen when she was distracted by the murder mystery, that they would be able to sneak up on her. And there was a lot of times where it was like she's barely making it out of these things alive, and she's isolated, and there's this storm. I thought it was just a little more suspenseful than this movie ended up.
Yeah, if it's supposed to be a survival movie, I didn't feel that at all. which means that there wasn't enough, how do I put this? There wasn't enough threat of the storm, or though I got to say one thing about the killer when he's in his winter gear and we don't know who it is and his face is all covered up. He was very spry for that doctor during those time periods.
One of the other things that and I think it is always supposed to be the doc that is ultimately that person. But in the comic, it's very clear that this was a group of people doing this plot that are slowly also killing each other so that they can be the one left at the end with all the gold. So there's some question of, is every time she's seeing those individuals the same one, or is it somebody who later on gets killed because the other people involved are trying to get less and less people involved to get this gold? So I think in some cases it was okay if it made no sense why this old man would be, you know, out there with an axe doing all these things, because it might not have been. It might have been somebody else that later on you found dead.
True, but we never found that person dead later on.
No, well, that's what's missing in this, is there were a few scenes where you saw people die, but there were more in the comic where it was like, oh, I'm trying to find this suspect, and then they find him dead, but recently dead. So not that he's been dead this whole time. So it's not as cleanly done. And I don't know if that's why they added this Russian plane part or not, but it's not as cleanly told of a story as it needs to be. But I also think, you know, what they could have done better, and I know we say this a lot, but I think this is a much better suited to be a miniseries where you can have more time and deal in more characters and have an episode that has barely any action, but really explains more of the mystery parts. None of that's in here. This feels like it's just kind of go here, now go here, now go here, now go here, and it's over.
Now, that's probably true. A TV show definitely would have been able to expand upon the character backgrounds and who they are, their motives. And so we talked that that's sort of one possibility for the future. But so you believe they should remake this as a series maybe, but not as a movie?
Arguably, but I also don't think that this story is that interesting. Like, it was fun to read. I'm not going to say don't go out and find it. But do they need to spend money to put this on a show? No. Like I mentioned, the most recent series of True Detective has the same kind of feel. I think it's a better story. And you always have the thing to watch to get you exactly what you do want in a story like this in this setting.
So should people go out and find this movie?
I would say no. It's not terrible, but it's forgettable, which is probably worse. All right. I remember a lot of terrible movies. I can tell you why they were terrible. If I don't remember a movie, it'd be something like this. You ask me 10 years, have I ever seen Whiteout? And I'm going to say, I don't know. What's it about? That's not good.
Yeah, I think you put the nail on the head on that one, or hit the nail on the head on that one. This is very forgettable. A couple years from now, I've probably forgotten I've watched it. There's nothing special to it. There's nothing amazing to it. It's an interesting concept out of the gate, but there's just no, I don't know, like oomph there. There's nothing special about it. It's just a murder mystery that happens to take place in Antarctica. It's kind of like someone had an idea for a gimmick, the first murder in Antarctica, but they didn't know really what to do with that idea. I mean, our audience may not know this, but one of the things I do outside this podcast is actually help people analyze the plot of their novel or their script, what have you. And help them work through the plot and determine where all the beats should be and all that fun stuff. I would have loved to sit down with the person who came up with this novel idea of first murder in Antarctica, because there's a lot there, but I think it's missing something. So what would you give it as a thumbs rating?
I'm going to unfortunately have to give it a zero actual connected thumbs to my hand, but a thumb mostly down, 3/4 down, frozen to a door.
Yeah, one frostbite thumb down. Jeremy, where can people find you?
As always, you can find me at retrovania.net, which is the hub for all things Retrovania, podcast Retrovaniacs, our YouTube channel, Twitch streams, and also our Discord that's always very active. Otherwise, you can find me here every 2 weeks.
For me, I'm always at Off Panel Creations, where we're always trying to build some piece of nerdy furniture. I want to thank you, our listeners, for spending some time with us. And if you have thoughts about Whiteout, should it be a movie about liquid paper? Should it be about an eldritch god? Send us a note over at movie-smash.com, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you again for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. This has been Movie Smash with Chris Roberts, Jeremy Parmentier, and Fergal Amayo, produced by me, Chris Roberts, executive produced by Off Panel Creations, LLC. Movie clips provided by the respective studios. You can rate and review the show at Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You might even find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for us? Visit us at movie-smash.com and send us a note. It too can be read on a future episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Movie Smash wherever you listen to your podcasts.